Welcome to Medically Speaking, Auburn's own medical radio show with host Dr. Mark Vaughn of the Auburn Medical Group and Larry Finney.
All right, so here we are. We're finally live. God, golly.
We just got a show.
Well, sort of, after a fashion.
Yes, welcome to Medically Speaking Radio with your hosts,
Larry Finney
and Dr. Mark Vaughn. We're glad to have you join us. And Larry is experimenting with Periscope on his mobile device this week.
Yeah, I've got it on a... I thought I had it on a stand that would be adequate to get the picture that we wanted, but it turns out that I have to go with the handheld thing. And I got to give our viewers a headache just moving around. It's going to kind of Blair Witchy and everything.
It's going to be found video. It's going to be the next movie, like the Almanac, Project Almanac.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
I think we lost most of the Periscope.
They just kind of...
We just gave him a complete headache. And they just said, forget it. We're done with these guys.
We're glad we have the podcast audience out there. Speaking of which, you folks in the podcast audience, if it's in the winter or early spring months, check out podcastawards.com and vote for Medically Speaking Radio for the best health-related podcast, some category like that.
Okay, well, somebody eagerly wants to know on Periscope if you have any single friends. I think they want to marry a doctor or something.
Single friends. Do we know any single doctors? Have we had any guests on the show who were single doctors?
Most doctors, I think, are they given a marriage certificate upon graduation from med school? Is that how
If they don't have one coming in.
If they don't have one coming in, yeah. So yeah, I don't think there's such a thing as a single doctor, is there?
I'm trying to think. I knew one. Yes, yes. He went into pathology. Another guy who went into radiology. I just noticed the guys who are single in my graduated medical school class are the guys who went to specialties where you don't have to have interaction with people.
That's just my observation.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that better?
Excellent. Psychologist.
Yeah. So, I'm tempted to even say the names of these guys, but
Are there any like dating sites for like people looking for doctors?
Interesting that you should ask, because
no, say there isn't.
Just this week, I found what's that one where you share pictures with everybody?
Snapchat.
My kids all have it. No, Snapchat's like Periscope.
Whatever.
Instagram. Yeah. I found Instagram for doctors. It's called Figure One. And it's supposed to be for medical professionals, but I was able to look through it and comment on it before they verified that I was a medical professional. So I'm kind of wondering how medical professional Figure One really is. Maybe you can only do it for a short, limited time before you have to verify your credentials. But it was interesting. I could tell from the comments, though, that people were writing that these people are not medical professionals who are participating in Figure One.
Well, we have one participant who's pretty single-minded. They want you to do a single doc show.
Like every one of our guests is a single doctor? Do we even have single doctors in Auburn?
I don't know.
Maybe we'll have to get them.
I said they're very rare. They're very rare.
Yeah, single doctors.
Well, we need to come up with a subject. Do we have a subject?
Yes, we do. We do have a subject.
Because it's turning into a train wreck.
But I thought the subject of single doctors was interesting. Because I do like talking about subjects other than just... the science, medical topics, things related to the medical industry, I find interesting also. We do have a topic, but before that, I want to tell you how you can communicate with us besides Periscope and Skype and the chat function on Mixlr, which I'm going to turn that on so you guys can chat through Mixlr, those of you who are listening live. But those of you who are on the podcast, you guys can't talk to us right now because we're pre-recorded when you're listening to us. So you can write to mark@medicallyspeakingradio.com, or you can comment on anything that you can find a comment space on medicallyspeakingradio.com or the Facebook for Medically Speaking Radio. But we will also want another form of communication. We want you guys to put ratings for the Medically Speaking Radio podcast on iTunes. You iTunes users, it takes just a few seconds to put in a little rating or maybe even a two-line review about how much you love Medically Speaking Radio and how they hook you up with single doctors or whatever it is that we're providing you with. So the subject is, this was all over Twitter just the last couple days, that the CDC was reporting on a study about Lyme disease, which we've talked about that quite a bit, both on the show and on Periscope, but we'll talk about it now, and you guys can participate in the discussion. Those who are listening live or watching on Periscope, you just comment, and Larry will be the moderator for the comments.
Yeah, if your comments are comment worthy, we'll put them up.
We will, and so that's why we have Larry there. We also have him there for his own questions. Do you have any questions, Larry? You're not on camera.
Nobody no, I'm not. You. Not temporary. I'm having a difficult enough time.
Is it a bad hair day? You're trying to read sideways.
Yeah. So here's the problem with on our Periscope, the comments come in vertically. So.
We're doing a horizontally oriented Periscope. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's unique.
It is.
So people can look at us, but if they want to read the comments, they have to turn it sideways. Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll try that. We'll see how that goes. And maybe they'll have comments on that.
But I didn't have any. No questions come to mind.
Okay. Well,
something will come up here.
We'll
somebody
start.
Wanted to know if gabapentin is an anti-inflammatory. I don't even know what gabapentin is used for.
Gabapentin is an anti-epileptic medicine used for seizures, but much, much more in family medicine used for treatment of nerve pain, types of neuritis or neuropathies. You'll see it used in settings like herpes or post-herpetic neuralgia, which is when people have that pain going on and on after they get shingles. You'll see it for diabetic peripheral neuropathy. We use it a lot for sciatica or pains from nerves being injured where the pain radiates down a limb. There's other things we use it for, something called trigeminal neuralgia, where people get nerve impulses in the sensory nerve of the face and it hurts, sometimes called tic de la rue. The tic is when they go like that, they wince because it hurts so bad when it hits them. It's this kind of electrical striking pain. So that's what gabapentin and similar drug Lyrica are, and they are both excellent. They don't have a lot of the risks that you have with other medicines that you use for pain control. They're controlled differently by the Drug Enforcement Agency, different classification than the hard pain medicines. They don't have the problem with dependence that the other ones do, or the addiction problem that we get with the opiates. They're used for pain. Good medicine. Excellent medicine.
So we're going to talk about Lyme disease.
What did the CDC have to say about Lyme disease? It's fun to say. Say it with me. Lyme disease.
Yeah. Okay.
It was fun, wasn't it?
It was kind of fun, I have to admit it.
Francisco, that's fun to say. Okay, the Lyme disease was about the spread. But what I found interesting was something else. So first I'll tell you about the spread. It was like over 300%. Are both my hands in the frame? Over, really? Is that why? Over 300% increase over, how many years was it? 25 year, I think. Period, in some counties in the northern Midwest and Northeast, which is where Lyme disease is really big. In the northern Midwest. There they have an organism that carries it. It's a little different species than the one we have out here. Same genus, but a little different tick. Both of them are called the black-legged tick. The one out here is called the western black-legged tick. And they both carry this Borrelia burgdorferi. That's the name of the spirochete. That's a type of bacteria. Actually, same type that syphilis is. It's a spirochete also. But this particular one, instead of getting it from... Larry, help me here.
Instead of getting it from tick bites?
Where do you get syphilis from?
Well, sexual contact.
Okay. This one comes from contact with an animal. In this case...
Are you talking about... You know, that kind of contact with an animal?
No. Did they bite you? Well,
no, like a direct bite from a dog or direct bite from a...
The tick.
Okay, the tick.
The tick. Yes, the tick.
Off the off of the dog.
And these ticks kind of have a hankering for rodents for the most part. They're not deer ticks like we see. They're not those big old monster gray things you see on your dog and you pull them off. These are a little different one. In fact, they're really, really tiny. In fact, why do I keep saying in fact? Because it's so factual. That's why I said it twice. The form of it, you know, they go through different life forms. You guys might remember from biology somewhere.
The larval form they have.
Yeah, you got the larva, you got the nymph, you got the adult. I suppose we have the equivalent in people, but we call them, I don't know.
Geriatrics.
geriatrics and teenagers or whatever.
Yeah.
So the nymph, these things are small. If you have with you, take out a dime, those of you listening in the United States, or if you have a US dime, take out said dime and look at the side that says one dime. While you're looking at your dime, nobody's doing this with me. Come on, get the dimes out. Do this.
Okay, hang on. Let me look in my pockets. Go on.
Do you have a dime on you?
Keep going.
Okay, you look at the side that says one dime. Look at the D. See how big that D is? That's the size of the nymph that causes the biggest problem. And they bite mostly in the hotter months, the late spring and summer.
So what's the problem that I would have if the D bit me?
If the D on a dime bit you.
Yeah.
Or a nymph that's about that size. If it just bites you, not necessarily anything. First of all, we would be concerned only if it was actually carrying the bacteria. And so that's a certain percentage of them. Then, by the best research, it looks like it takes 36 to 48 hours of it being stuck on you to transmit the disease to you. It actually has to find its way from the digestive tract of this creature into you while it's feeding. And it's feeding in the opposite direction of where the bacteria is going. It's sucking the blood out of you and into it. And when you have the disease problem, it's because the bacteria is coming from inside of it into you, which is against the current. I don't know if that actually has anything to do with it. That's my opinion. But 36 to 48 hours, I will concede to those who disagree with that, who say there's evidence it has happened in tick feedings that they know happened for shorter than 36 to 48 hours. I will say, yes, you guys do have some evidence that suggests that has happened. But for the most part, it really looks like most cases are going to take 36 to 48 hours of this tick being attached.
Okay, so then after that 36 or 48 hours, what evil thing happens to me after all of this horrible biting?
Well, hopefully you find it and take it off, which is one of the major principles of prevention. Is after you get done being out where you may be rubbing up against plants, hiking in the canyon or wherever you live, whatever it is you do, where you walk through the brush or hug your dog after he's been running and chasing the squirrel, you take off any ticks. You look around and see if they're there. And remember, they can be very small, the size of that dime. Okay, so after that, well, if you took them off, there shouldn't be a problem. But if it did bite onto you and it did stay for 36 to 48 hours, you may in the next, as early as 3 days, maybe as long as a week, start to see something where the bite occurred. And it may be what anybody gets with bug bite, or almost anybody gets with a bug bite. You get a little redness and a bump, like a mosquito bite. Well, don't worry about that localized redness in that one spot by itself. That's considered a normal reaction to a tick bite. What you worry about is this expanding, getting larger rash that goes out and then it starts clearing in the middle.
Would we call it a concentric pattern? It just gets bigger, bigger, bigger?
No, just expanding. Concentric implies that there's another circle inside of it also.
Okay.
You may have some redness there inside, but it's this what we call erythema migrans, meaning migrating or moving redness. It's not truly a ring. It's got a border and it's expanding. And that is reason to go see your doctor if you see that.
Okay, because then I have what? Other than an unsightly rash,
you have the primary stage of Lyme disease.
Will it kill me? What's going on?
The primary stage does not kill you. The primary stage is nothing more than a rash, maybe some flu-like symptoms, body aches, fever, headache, fatigue. And that would be the very first stage. And this lasts for just, maybe a week. Sometimes it can take up to a month for the first stage to kick in.
See, you're applying that because there's a first stage, there must be a second and perhaps even a third stage.
Oh, you are very astute.
Ooh.
Okay, so then there's a stage that happens, they say, in the days to weeks. That's as specific as the CDC is on their website about the second stage. Anyway, some people will get it just right after the primary stage. They'll jump right into the second. Others, it'll take them into the next month before they get into the second stage. And this is where you start to get possibly palpitations of the heart. You can get meningitis, a headache with a stiff neck. You can get, the swollen knees, painful joints, the large joints. So the knees are usually ones that are affected. So kind of an arthritis, a carditis, and a meningitis are the three major things: joints, heart, brain, or neurologic system. This is more serious and a little harder to treat, but you can still get treatment for it. And then there's this ongoing stage past that where people can have complications of the previous three. And then there comes in a little bit of controversy because people will get treated at some point. They'll get identified and treated. The controversy comes in and what comes after that. Because about, I think it's 10 to 20% of people who are treated will continue to have symptoms despite having been treated. So now this is where the divergence occurs. You've got the infectious disease specialist saying that this is probably an autoimmune effect, meaning your body's own immune system has been turned on and is now turning on your body, that the Lyme bacteria has been eliminated once the effective treatment has been done, which shouldn't take more than about a month's treatment. Then you've got the people on the other side who say, no, the bacteria is still there. It's just hard for you to find it. And it can be effectively treated with long-term treatments with IV antibiotics. Now, this is where I follow the infectious disease people and not the people who say, keep pumping people full of IV antibiotics because it's going to help. Well, I was looking over some studies that the CDC has presented on this, and there were three of them. One of them found that there was no difference between the people who were treated with the long-term IV antibiotics and those who weren't, as far as how they did. Another one found that there was a difference, that the people felt better, the fatigue was improved, but the neurologic symptoms, cognition, being able to think straight, which is a problem with the late stage, that didn't improve. And there were complications related to the use of the antibiotics. In fact, people even had to be hospitalized because of problems with the antibiotics. They're not benign 100% all the time to the person who's being treated. So they thought that given the little bit of improvement in fatigue, it's not worth doing this because the people still didn't have the cognitive effects improved. Then there was another study that found that the cognitive effects were actually improved too. But as soon as they stopped taking the antibiotics, the benefit was gone. And there were so many people who were having complications from the use of the IV antibiotics, these powerful biotics you have to take in different cycles frequently, that it wasn't worth recommending it to do the treatment. So those are the two sides. Now, this article said over 300% increase over this 25-year period in some of these areas of the Northwest or Northeast, excuse me. They didn't really mention in the article the West Coast at all. We were kind of left out about, but you do have Lyme disease along the entire West Coast, the entire state of California, except for the northwesternmost county. What's the northwesternmost county?
Humboldt?
Modoc?
Northwest?
I'm sorry, Eastern.
That would be Modoc.
Okay. Somewhere in Modoc, I think, is the only place where we don't have it in California, but the rest, the whole state. So they showed this increasing all over, and they talked about different factors related to that, possibly differences in being able to identify it or definitions of diagnosis that occur throughout the years. But this is a huge increase, and it did also show some spreading away from where it was heavy 25 years ago, and it's going out to other areas around that. But this is what I found most interesting. There were areas where it was really big 25 years ago, and it's gone down. Now, they thought that part of that might be knowing that there's a similar tick-borne illness, STARI. I don't remember what the STARI stands for, but it's another tick-borne illness with a rash that maybe they're better identifying. But it also could be because of increased awareness and efforts at keeping people from getting Lyme disease, education of the public.
Well, wouldn't people just naturally not want ticks on them anyway, notwithstanding whether they knew about Lyme disease or not?
You would
think so. The idea of little bugs crawling all over
you would think. You know? It is surprising what comes in a doctor's office door. patient, you have had this going on for how long? Well, doctor, it just never really bugged me that much. I can't get days off work to go see the doctor.
They're in denial or whatever. Or I'll just tough it out, or no, I'm healthy. Or
I'll get over it. Everything else goes away.
Or part of it is, I bet, they just don't want to hear the potential for bad news.
All sorts of factors in there. Some of them psychological, many of them psychological. So anyway, I was really glad to see that it's gone down. So I was talking a little bit about, you know, you want to get the tick off. You want to check yourself after you come in. You want to make sure things aren't staying there for 36, 40 hours. It's also advisable to wear light colored clothing, so it's easier to identify them. You also want to cover yourself so they don't get on your skin and be able to bite on and stick on. And just try your best not to be tromping through all of the brush by taking trails where you don't have all the branches hitting against you. That's good advice for poison oak, too, for those of you around here. Wow. Okay. So what we'll do is, I think this will be a successful thing. We're going to re-periscope while we continue with the show for our live audience on Mixlr. So that's just simply closing it and starting it back up. So while Larry does that, I will talk about the next subject. And of course, if you guys want to call in on Skype, you can, too. If you're watching us through medicallyspeakingradio.com, you just click on that little blue S down there on the right. Also, you can chat through Mixlr if you're logged in on Mixlr. So the next subject would be something that we talked about quite a bit yesterday, and that was hemorrhoids. We talked quite a bit about that because somebody wanted to know about getting rid of hemorrhoids and if there's effective surgical cures. And I talked a lot about banding, about symptomatic treatment just with Preparation H or Anusol HC. And then I didn't talk about actually surgically removing the hemorrhoid. I did talk about lancing one if it has a blood clot in it, letting all the blood out. But also, they can be surgically removed, and then the area where the hemorrhoid was can be sewn back together.
This sounds pretty gross. Hemorrhoid removal.
Somebody really wanted to know about it. Okay, are we back up on the old periscope there?
The scope and,
so suddenly you see all these people joining in and checking out. What is this that just came up?
Why would periscope
live?
People want to know about hemorrhoids?
That's where the question came from. If they want to talk about something else.
Oh, really? A periscoper asked
that. That's where it came. No, I didn't.
We'll take any questions.
I didn't say you guys want to hear about hemorrhoids. Somebody asked me about hemorrhoids.
Somebody wants to know why your scrubs are red. It reminds me of a joke. It's so that if the blood
Stuart,
is on them, people can't see it.
Get my brown pants.
Bring my brown trousers.
Yeah, it's kind of along those. It's not really red. Would you call it maroon?
Kind of maroonish.
Maroon. Which, of course, in medicine, we talk about maroon-colored stool.
Somebody said your scrubs are Dexter's scrubs.
Are they really? I've not watched the show, so I don't know. For those of you on the visual medium, you can see they're not Dexter's. They have my name on them. But you can't see Larry's because he's behind the thing. His is like this, where it says MD, except it's got the prohibition, the circle with the line through it. Because he's not a doctor.
One guy says they use red scrubs at their hospital for suicide watch. I guess I have to ask him, suicide watch for the medical professionals assigned to suicide watch?
Or is it the patient?
Or the patients.
So that they're easy to spot when they're trying to escape, I'm assuming. Or so that, I don't know, I could come up with some crude thoughts as to why you would use red scrubs for the suicide risk patient.
It's taking a dark turn.
Oh no!
It's for the patient. He confirmed it's for the patient, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're kind of reddish, the scrubs that we wear for medically.
I think probably the short answer is we got a deal on them.
We got a deal on them. I think it was because at the time we had this color scheme on the website, and it was actually this yellow with this reddish type color. I think that's where it originally came from. If we were to do it again, we'd do different colors. But it's funny that we do wear a uniform for a radio show, which makes more sense now that it's on Periscope and on.
Yeah, we have to add some visual appeal.
Yeah. You know. So visual appeal.
Well, we'll try to work on different costumes. Anyway, so you were talking about what the heck? Oh, hemorrhoids, for crying out loud.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. That I was just updating yesterday's Periscope.
Good. I hope we're not getting back into
it. We don't have to run with it if we don't want to. But
we can just throw the questions open to our Periscope audience.
Oh yeah, anything they want, or Skype.
Bizarro medical
fine.
Questions.
That's fine. Yeah, we can talk about medical subjects. We can also speak about the medical world. You know, somebody was wanting to know about single doctors, which, as we discovered, there seems to be a paucity of single doctors out there. They seem to get snatched up before becoming doctor.
Yeah, I think that's it's like the scouting system.
Yeah. Plus, well, there's just that whole, well, it may be different now because is it true that
you got to have somebody to support you while you're going through medical school, right?
That's there's a lot of truth to that. that was our situation. There's this whole thing about people getting married later in life. I wonder if maybe this will change. Maybe there'll be more single doctors because aren't your kids getting married later than you did?
Yeah,
kind of a generational thing. They just don't see it as much of a priority, or yeah, I don't know. It happens. Yeah. So with, you know, I was trying to think of around our area of single doctors, and I've been racking my brain for who is single in the medical community around me. And I cannot
They don't exist. Besides the Periscoper, the single Periscoper who was trying to, you know, hook up with a doctor is...
They're gone?
Yeah.
You didn't even tell me if they're male or female.
They didn't. And I think they were just asking metaphorically or whatever, you know. For the...
Yeah.
But I think it proves a point. Yeah, they're tough to find.
I don't know. The doctor's lounge at the hospital, which family medicine doctors don't hang out there because... we don't admit patients to the hospital anymore now that we have hospitalists, so we don't really hang out there like we used to. Actually, you couldn't really hang out there because you always have something to do. I'm not sure who the people are. Oh, anesthesiologists. They hang out between cases.
If I would date an anesthesiologist. You know, that's a whole...
It kind of makes you wonder. Those specialties that are a little higher risk for substance abuse or... Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder. So, and I don't know if there's any more single anesthesiologists than any other specialty, but as I had said earlier, I did make that observation that the guys who went, I'm thinking specifically of two men who went into the specialties where you don't have direct patient contact are the ones who were single when we graduated from medical school.
So sort of like certain professions are associated with people who are introverted. You know, IT and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes, that is exactly what we're talking about there. So if we don't have any other questions over there, this is a show.
There it is. It's a wrap.
So we thank you for joining us. And of course, we're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific. And we will keep doing the Periscope because we get more questions from Periscope than we do from Skype. Do you have something there?
No, somebody observed that the forensic pathologist is another one who's kind of a loner. Yeah, I would think so. Well done. Well played, sir. Well played.
Yes. So until next time, this is, as always,
Larry Finney
and Dr. Mark Vaughn telling you to stay in good health.